I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
It's really good to be here with you once again.
As you know, there's been a lot of talk at the moment about just where the commercial property market sits within the current cycle. Perhaps you could begin by explaining the various stages each cycle goes through.
Yeah, property cycles are interesting. And for the average person, they sort of know whether things are hot or not hot, but they don't necessarily understand where they are in the specific cycle and what is necessarily going to happen next. And I think in an earlier podcast, we might have talked about the cycles for different sectors of the commercial property market. And with offices, and let's take CBD offices because that tends to dictate the office market, the cycle tends to be from peak to peak about 18 years. Now, it might be 16 or 17, it might be 19, 20, but on average, historically, over the last 100-odd years, it's been about 18 years. Now, your industrial cycle seems to be about half that. So you have two industrial cycles for each office cycle, whereas retail seems to be six-year cycles. So therefore, you have three retail cycles for every one office cycle or two industrial. And it's only in the last 3 months, the last part of the cycle, that probably the last, I guess, 3 to 4 years of the cycle, of the 18-year period, that all three sectors are in an upward movement, and that's when you get the boom. And so that's what you need to watch. So in between all that, yes, you'll have ups and downs for the retail and industrial, but you only really have a boom every 18 years on average. So it's understanding where you are in the cycle for the particular type of property, but where you are in the overall that 18-year period, so that you can understand when you're looking at purchasing a property, how it's going to fare. And if you invest at the right time, and bear in mind the fluctuation of price that occurs in the different phases of the cycle when you're looking at a particular property, that's when you're able to make your informed decision. And it's also worth noting that people have different names for the various phases, but it is actually really only one cycle that we're talking about. So, you know, let's look. Start with the expansion. And when you've got the expansionary part or phase of the cycle, property market is on the rise. You know, property values are rising. In the office market, let's say, vacancies are falling, rents are rising, therefore it becomes more attractive and yields start to fall, or the technical term is soften. So in other words, if when times weren't good, they were on an 8% yield, they might get down to 7.5% or 7%, depending on where you are in the cycle, but also the size of the property itself. It also gets easier to get money from banks. They'll generally lend you a bit more. In tough times, they bring it back. In other times, they'll let it out a bit more is what they'll let. There are obviously a lot less foreclosures in the market as it's expanding. And properties, when they're on the market, tend to be sold, if they're any good, very quickly. And sure, you might go to auction, but if it's a private sale, sometimes it might only be on the market for 2, 3, 4 weeks, and you're starting to see the time on the market fall, the prices improve, and there's generally a better buzz in the market in that expansionary period.
So after the expansion phase, what happens then?
Okay. Well, after the expansion, you actually have a further phase, which is more over-expansion. And that's when you have developers coming into the market and starting to build in anticipation of what often is seen as a never-ending demand. And to a degree, on the residential side, you're seeing that both, let's look at Melbourne and Sydney, where there's massive unit developments going on because there appears to be a surge of demand in a take-up and pre-sales and so forth. And I suspect there's going to be an oversupply, and the banks already are starting to put some constraints on developers, whereas they used to needed to have 70 or 80% pre-sales before they could actually start on a project. Now they're looking to say you've got to have your total loan covered by pre-sales before they'll allow you to start. Now, that hasn't got the same situation with commercial. And what's interesting is that the cycles are different. Melbourne and Sydney, for the commercial cycle, is moving ahead. Both of them are moving ahead, whereas Brisbane, Perth, Adelaide and Canberra are lagging behind, because whereas the commercial cycles used to be in sync last century, with a global financial crisis and the impact of the decline in mining, the mining states and the lesser states have been really affected, whereas Sydney and Melbourne have bounced back relatively quickly. So the next few years, you're going to start to see an oversupply occur. Now, there's still quite a lot of catch-up going on. Melbourne and Sydney have been helped with Darling Harbour and Docklands, so that there's been most of the lettings there have been pre-committed, so there hasn't been an overbuilding. But they're starting to see a lot more cranes on the horizon at the moment. So I would say that you're going to, over the next 3 or 4 years, start to see developers come back into the market, and there'll be some speculative building as opposed to construction with pre-commitment, so that you'll start to see this overexpansion. Prices will still rise, properties will still be selling, but there will be demand will outstrip supply, and that will force prices up. And as I said, you'll start to see developers who are becoming more and more active in the commercial property market. That's offices, industrial, and to a lesser degree, retail. And that will continue until people realise that there is now an oversupply, and effectively the market peaks, and you're not going to see the continued exuberance and demand at that point.
Okay, the market has peaked and now contracted. Is that where the decline stops?
Well, yes, the market's peaked and properties are taking much longer to sell and lease. People are scrambling trying to sell properties or to remortgage, but the problem is once the market's peaked, you're selling into a falling market. And unlike shares, where there'll always be a buyer, just a matter of price, once the market peaks and contracts, it becomes harder and harder to sell, because you know, the smart investor says, well, if I just hang on a bit longer, the price is going to fall a bit more. And so that presents a problem. And as I said, it becomes overvalued, and therefore the banks become very hesitant, valuers become very conservative, the property values start to fall, more and more space is available on the market, the vacancies rise, investors who have overcommitted themselves end up having to force sales, and foreclosures occur. There's obviously less demand for properties. It's not that the people mightn't have cash, but they're just not eager to rush into buying because they feel it could be cheaper tomorrow. And banks become incredibly cautious and are not really interested in advancing funds to an investor in a market that looks pretty fragile at the moment. So it's not easy, and it's something that you never try and pick the peak of a market. You always want to leave a bit of blue sky for someone else. And, you know, unfortunately, no one rings a bell at the top of the market. You've just got to use your best endeavours, get the best advice, And as I said, always make sure there's someone behind you to take at your position.
After the market finally bottoms out, I imagine everyone is rather relieved.
Yeah, look, again, no one really tells you when the bottom has occurred. And yes, people feel relieved, but in many cases, it'll sort of trundle along the bottom for a little while. I mean, there's a period on the before it reaches the bottom, when it reaches the bottom, and when it recovers. And it's very hard to work out exactly where that is. But it's I suppose, what you call the recovery phase. And that happens after a recession, and it's not necessarily an economic recession, but as far as the property is concerned, the two may coincide. But it's a low point where property prices stop falling, they stabilize, they flatline, and the economic activity starts to rise. And you're starting to see that, or you have for the last probably 18 months in Melbourne and Sydney, where the confidence has returned. And it was more the overseas market that saw it before the locals. And you've seen a lot of Asian money come into Melbourne and Sydney and buy up commercial property. And that's because they see the fundamentals a lot stronger than we do. And it's risen off the bottom. And so property prices are rising again. The economy, as I said, has stabilized, and demand slowly increases during that recovery period. Now, Brisbane and Perth haven't yet reached that point. The vacancies are still rising. Demand is not anywhere near what the supply of space is like. And so there's a sort of a disparity between the different capital cities. So yes, everyone's relieved, but depending where you are geographically, obviously different states or different capital cities are moving at different paces.
Given all of this, when is the best time to buy, and how will you know that?
Okay, that's a good question. As I said, no one really tells you when the top and the bottom is, so you need to just have good consultants around you. And as I said, if you're taking a long-term strategy, it doesn't really matter where you buy. You obviously don't want to buy close to the top of a cycle, but sometimes to get the best property, you sometimes have to buy slightly before the bottom. Now, you might say that's strange. Why wouldn't I wait till I see it definitely increasing and going up in value? Well, the problem is you then have to wait in line. If you buy it just before the bottom, you get to start the line. You get to pick and choose. Now, just because properties are taking a fair while to sell doesn't necessarily mean there's anything wrong with them if the market itself is down. All it means is that buyers are being cautious. And in many cases, particularly when I say the smaller end, we'll say in the sort of under $2 million bracket, when the market is down, most of those buyers are amateurs. They may be wealthy, but they're amateurs. And they don't necessarily get advice. Therefore, they're hesitant. And when they're confused, people generally do nothing. And that's the ideal time to go in and buy if you do your homework, do your due diligence. I mean, if you've got a good, solid tenant in there that's weathered any downturn and the property itself is good, the lease is good. When I say good, it's, you know, at least a five-year lease going forward, might be longer. It means that you're fundamentally buying a good property. You're getting up with a good yield, because yield is a reflection of the ability to sell quickly, so that if the particular person needs to sell, you can negotiate a pretty good deal. So for me, the ideal time is to buy either just before or what turns out to be the bottom, or certainly not much after that. Once the market starts to improve, as I said, the competition picks up. Now, in Melbourne and Sydney, particularly because of the influx of Asian money, a lot of people, because they're being beaten to the punch, most, as I said, the amateur investor, who, as I said, may be quite well off, but is not necessarily experienced, will step into the market, look at a property and think, well, I've got 3, 4, 5 weeks to think about that, maybe make an offer, do a bit of investigation. They go back a week, 10 days, a fortnight later, and they're told the property sold. So all of a sudden, they're making rash decisions. And this, unfortunately, is the problem in Melbourne and Sydney at the moment, is that there's a lot of money trying to find a home, and people are paying scant regard to the fundamentals of investing, and they're paying prices and accepting yields that don't necessarily justify the long-term value that's being established. And what we're finding is that sometimes valuers at the moment are not valuing the property at what was paid for that property. And that's mainly because the valuers are thinking, well, you know, if they're artificially inflated, they don't want the valuation they put in there to come back to bite them in a year's time when the bank turns around and says, well, hang on, you valued it at such and such, which might have been the price they paid, but now it's only worth such and such. And the valuers, you know, some of them think back to the property crash in the late 80s, but more recently in the global financial crisis, which was nothing of their doing. They couldn't have foreseen that. But nonetheless, they were the ones that put the valuation on the property against which the banks have lent. So the banks are the one that suffer, always look for someone to blame. So you've got the issue that if you are buying at the moment, you need to have a lease structure in place that is going to stand you in stead for the long term. So there's nothing wrong with buying now, but you just need to have the right property, a solid tenant, and a good lease in place. And as I said, you need to, when you're looking at your purchase, you need to take notice of when you anticipate, or the advice you are provided with leads you to believe the peak will be, and aim to sell the property in the 12 months leading up to that anticipated peak. Now, at that point when you sell, ideally you want to have at least a 3-year lease remaining, or 3 years on the lease remaining. So in other words, it might have been a 5-year lease entered into 2 years prior to the date you anticipate selling, so there's 3 years to run. Now, in a rising market where everyone is totally excited and carried away with how good the market is, 3 years is fine. In a poor market, 3 years is not that good. You want a longer lease. But the idea of selling with 3 years to run, and ideally, as I said, at least 12 months before the end of the peak on the cycle, what you're doing is you're selling and leaving something in for someone else. Yes, they might have another 12 months of growth that you rationalize, you've foregone, but the reality is you've already had growth because you've already bought the property probably 3-4 years before. You've had 3-4 years of growth, and you get out, and there's two ways to make money. Either buy low and sell high, or sell low, sell high, and buy back in low. And I know during the property crash in the 1980s, we had a lot of people sold out just before the top, and some of them were actually buying back the same property they'd sold 2 years earlier, but buying back at 30% less than what they sold it for. So there's nothing wrong with the property, but the person that bought it at the top of the market overcapitalized and was forced to sell. And they knew that how good the property was, so they were happy to buy it from the mortgagee, and it was a good deal. So, as I said, that's the two ways you've got to look at it. So it's just understanding where you are in the cycle, and there's nothing wrong with buying partway through. And if you've got a long-term horizon, again, okay, you might buy 2 years before the end of a cycle, and you might say, well, you know, if the market's going to fall, should I wait? Don't know. Well, if you've got, let's say, a 10-year lease, you're going to ride out that cycle. I mean, you've bought for long-term growth. You're better to lock in a good lease with a good tenant. It might be 3 or 4% escalations per annum over a 10-year period. You're going to weather the peak and then coming down a bit and then coming back up again. So unless you want to trade property, which I don't recommend, it comes down to lease structure and understanding where you are in the cycle.
And finally, could you quickly tell our listeners where you feel each capital city is within the current cycle?
I think I've probably more or less covered this, but just to quickly recap, Sydney and Melbourne, I think you're going to see a peak somewhere 2019, 2020. Because the other capital cities are behind, you're not going to see the upturn in Brisbane and Perth probably for another 18 months, maybe 2 years. So that's going to push their peak out by a similar amount, 18 months, 2 years from that. And I suspect Adelaide and Canberra are going to be much the same. So Sydney and Melbourne will probably peak first, and the other ones will flow in the next couple of years, 18 months, 3 years following that. So hopefully that covers what you're after.
Look, I realise we've covered a fair amount today, but I think it was necessary given the amount of hype at the moment.
Yeah, look, all you need to do is to be aware of what's going on around you. I mean, never try to pick the absolute top of the market, and always leave something in there for the next person.
Well, thanks, Chris. That's been great advice.